February the 18th in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Esther McCauley, or Polly McCauley, at the Chapel Hill Library.
Good morning, Polly.
Good morning.
I'd like to start the questions this morning by asking you what it was like growing up in Chapel Hill. And if you would let me know when you were born. I won't ask you how much you weigh, but just let me know when you were born so we have an idea of the years that we're talking about. Thank you.
Could I put it between certain years?
Sure, that'd be fine.
I was born in a few years after the Depression. To James and Esther Atwater, right at 509 Church Street in their bedroom, Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
And what was it like growing up in Chapel Hill when you were young?
I thought it was great to grow up in Chapel Hill. I was very, very happy. I can't remember many sad days at this time because looking back, I think I was very happy. I had two brothers, two sisters, good friends, nice family, and I was happy.
What were your parents like, Polly?
My parents were very supportive. My mother did graduate from Livingston College. My father was a laborer. He left here before he got married and worked as a porter, came back and married my mother at my grandparents' house, Main Street, Carrboro. Maggie Jones Morphus and Will Morphus were my grandparents.
Did your mother work also?
My mother worked part-time. Before she got married for North Carolina Mutual in Durham. She lived in Durham, but after our marriage, when they started having a family, she was a homemaker.
And your father did what for a living?
My father worked for the university the majority of the time I remember, but he also ran a pressing club. This was up near St. Paul Church. Several men ran what they call a pressing club, but the majority of the time he worked for the university. He had three or four jobs to support his family. He would fire the furnaces at several houses, leave early in the morning and start the fires before the families would get up, stroke the whatever it is, the furnace, put the coal in. And one was Dr. Wells. At that time, he lived on Main Street. And he also worked at the Chapel Hill Country Club. He was the janitor there, and also he served parties and other activities. One person I remember he worked for permanently was Mrs. Bagby. She would have a dance club at the Chapel. She would have dance classes at the Chapel Hill Country Club, teaching all the little students how to dance and have activities, and he worked for her among his many part-time jobs. He also did something unusual at that time. He sold water the football games. He would put on his own white jacket and put a barrel that he contrapted around his back and bought cups and everything. He didn't sell the water. He would say, you know, this is a donation. But just think, with all these people walking around with bottles of water, drinking them now, if he just had a little bit more insight, he could have really profited from selling that water at the game.
He made some money from it, though.
Yes, he made much money. He would bring home quarters and half dollars and things like that. He certainly did.
Sounds like an industrious man.
He had five children and a wife to support.
That's a lot.
Right.
What was the pressing club?
They would press clothes, and at that time I know there was a lot of blocking of hats that the gentlemen wore. So it was just another name for cleaners, dry cleaners.
And was that was a group business?
Yes, it was a group business.
Did you feel poor growing up?
I didn't know what poor was.
So you always had enough food and clothing, and you felt the house was adequate, good heating?
Yes, I was a child, so we had a stove, so we had heat. We would stand around the stove from the front and then turn around and warm up the back. So we had heat, we had food, and some of that was due to the dances and the dinners they had at the country club.
I don't understand what you mean. Some of it was, did you take part in those, or did your father bring food home?
My father brought food home.
How did your parents get along?
I think they got along beautiful. Yeah, sometimes our bedroom, the girls' bedroom, was right next to theirs, and the boys were upstairs. And sometimes you'd wake up, you'd hear them laughing at night, and I would say, wonder what they're talking about. They had a great relationship as far as I'm concerned, because they had their own private jokes. He could say a word and she would just laugh and laugh. Just the opposite. She could say something to him and he would laugh and laugh. And we always ate together in the morning. We had breakfast together. At night we had dinner together. We all had our special seats. Whatever was there, it was expected that we would eat it.
Did your father drink?
Yes, my father had a special cabinet that we could not open in the dining room. And inside that cabinet there were bottles of alcohol and small glasses. And we would, when he wasn't there, we could peep in that cabinet and see that there was alcohol. And when they would have company, especially men, they would close the dining room door, and we knew that they'd use these glasses, and we would sniff them. Say, ooh, they've been drinking. But he was not a so-called drinker.
So you didn't see him drunk?
I never saw him drunk. I never saw him drink.
What was the house like? Two-story house?
It was a two-story house. This is a house that's still on Church Street, 509. When they purchased it, it was a small house. They bought another house, and they had a local carpenter, Mr. Hibbert, come in, and they worked, and made it a two-story house and added a kitchen.
Who did they buy it from?
I have no idea.
Do you know if they had a mortgage or not?
They had a mortgage. Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about how they got the mortgage?
No, I have papers at home that would give me that information, but I can't remember right now.
Can you tell me, you had a stove heat?
Yes.
Wood-burning stove?
Coal.
Coal-burning stove?
Yes.
And what about the bedrooms? Did you have ducts with heating of the bedroom?
No, we just had a large, warm morning heater in the living room. And then we had oil stoves in the kitchen. At that time, little oil stoves that would warm up the kitchen and the other part of the house. And we would move the little stove, you know, to the dining room if we were eating in there. We would move it to warm up the bathroom throughout the house.
So I take it the bedrooms were sort of chilly in the wintertime.
I guess so. I really, really can't remember being cold, but I do remember we had lots of quilts. Of course, one that I still have in my possession. It was made out of samples that they would send around to tell us. I don't know who made it, but I still have this quilt at home. We had lots of heavy quilts on our beds.
What about the neighborhood? Can you tell me about your neighborhood and the friends you had?
You want the names? I would forget someone, but...
It's up to you. I don't think that's important, just the general overview of your friends. But if you want to give names, that's okay.
We had a wonderful group of children. Since there were five of us, my brothers had their friends. I had my friends, and my sisters had their friends right in the neighborhood. We played together. We laughed together, and we just had a good time. Of course, there was little fights and arguments among our little group, but for the majority of the time, we were just out in the street, right at 509 Church Street, in the street, playing ball.
Was it paved?
Yes, it was paved. I can't remember it being unpaved. It was paved from Main Street until one house past our house. It was not paved beyond that.
So the whole community there didn't have paving?
No.
What about the running water and sewer when you were growing up? Did you have that in?
Yes, we had running water and sewage.
And what about the rest of the neighborhood? Did everyone have it?
My father's aunt lived across the street in a log house. That would be just about 511 Church Street, 512, I can't remember. But she lived in a log house, and she didn't have, she had a septic tank. So she's the only person that I remember in the neighborhood that did not have, and I was grown when I found this out. So as far as I was concerned, everybody else had running water and sewage.
How did you get disciplined if you were out in the street playing and you did something that wasn't nice? Or somebody, maybe you didn't do it, somebody did it, somebody else.
Well, I wouldn't remember this if I hadn't received punishment. Well, my mother would send me out to a hedge bush, and she would say, get a nice long switch. And you would bring it in full of leaves, and she would then tell you to take the leaves off. And you ended up with a nice long switch. It was very, very flexible. You would get spankings on your legs, always on your legs.
Why on the legs?
Well, I don't know, but you had to dance, as you would get these little switches that never left marks because you would just get the little sting from it.
What if your mother wasn't there and a neighbor saw someone doing something?
The neighbor would probably call my parents. They didn't punish me, but they would call my parents and let them know. Teachers did the same thing, and the punishment was left up to our parents.
How did you treat your neighbors or adults? Did you treat them the same way you treated your parents?
You mean the grown-ups?
The grown-ups, yes.
Yes, yes. We respected, called everybody Mr. and Mrs. And would speak to them with the most respect. Yes.
Did you feel that, in a way, the community raised you, or that it was just your parents raising you?
Well, of course, my parents did the majority of the raising, but my community helped because they did know everyone, and they did know that if they called my parents, that my parents would believe them, and we would receive the appropriate punishment.
see many bad things in the neighborhoods among your friends or your friends' parents, things like physical abuse in homes or broken homes or alcohol abuse that was to excess?
Well, it's hard to remember, but I know there was domestic abuse, there was alcoholic abuse, there was incest, there was anything any other community had. But the thing about it is our parents didn't involve us in this. They talked behind closed doors, they talked to other adults, and they kept these things to themselves. I never witnessed any of these things, but there was certainly anything that happens in the world, in our community, rape, robberies, drunkenness, but we were not involved in it. The children in our house were not involved in it, except our relatives. And they just didn't talk to us about it. This was grown-ups' things.
Did you grow up with any kind of fear of crime or fear of being attacked?
No.
Fear of robbery?
I didn't have fear of anything.
Did you keep your door closed at home? Locked?
We slept with the doors open, unlocked, many times. Just didn't have that fear. Especially in the summer, the windows would be open. Sometimes we would have screens, and sometimes we wouldn't. But I just didn't have that fear. It may seem like paradise, but I'm sure I'm relying on my memories. I just can't remember anything.
Anything that was bad?
Anything that was bad in my house, in my immediate neighborhood. When I say neighborhood, I'm speaking of Church Street, not Lindsay, McDay, McMaster, Caldwell. I'm speaking of how I felt in my house on Church Street.
Did you have much interaction with the white community?
Interaction. We would walk every Saturday downtown. Sometimes we would have to walk through the little community. We'd walk about three blocks up Church Street. You could turn to the left and walk through there, and you could, that was the only white community I could remember at that time. There would be children our age, and we would renew their names. Sometimes they would tease us, sometimes we would tease them, but there was no violence. I remember when we were skating, we would skate to Carrboro, and kids would holler at us. I'm not saying they were Carrboro kids, but they would holler at us and say racial things like that. But that's when we were out skating. And we had some people that, especially the guys, that were friends with my brothers that carried newspapers together. And there was a certain bond between white kids and black newspaper boys.
What was the impact of segregation on you growing up?
Well, since I grew up in segregation, I knew that I had to, I felt that I should accept it. I should go to the fountain to drink from the colored water. I should sit on the back of the bus. I should follow the rules so I wouldn't get harmed. I don't ever remember drinking from a fountain. It said colored, but there were plenty fountains that said colored. You were trained to accept this is the way it is, to keep out of trouble.
Did you fear being attacked?
No, I don't think I feared being attacked. I felt I should stay in my place. Yes, I should stay in my place. This is where I belong. My parents were just probably two generations away from slavery. So this is the way we were raised.
Were your grandparents in the area also?
Yes, my grandparents, one set, my maternal grandparents lived in Carrboro, Main Street, where the Arts Center is. We visited them quite often. My paternal grandparents lived in Philadelphia. We visited them every summer.
How much stress did you feel was put on education in your house?
A great deal of stress. Good stress. Since we didn't have television until I was a teenager, we read a lot. We read the Titanic. We read the newspapers. We had books. We just read a lot. My father would bring books from the university, old magazines some of the professors would save from him. We read Life. We'd have Time. We would talk about the things we read. We just did a lot of reading. We had a big front porch with rocking chairs. We would sit there. We played together. We played house like everybody else. We had chickens and we had, that's all I can remember, but we did read a lot at my house.
And what was the effect on that so far as the education of your brothers and sisters and you was concerned?
Well, I think that had a great impact on us. I think it gave us it gave us a love of reading. It gave us, it opened up the world to us. And having this as a university community at that time, that was great. Not having to live in a place where there were a lot of factories. The university was the major thing in Chapel Hill. We'd go downtown when they had football games or park on Main Street and just watch the students and dream. One day, you know, we will be going to college, maybe not at the university, but we could dress like that, we could carry books like they did, we could go to classes. We look forward to higher education.
How many of your brothers and sisters got into college education?
All five of us attended college. One did not graduate, but she moved on to dental technology, as dental hygienist at that time, so she finished that. So we all finished beyond high school. And that was a task at that time.
I'll bet.
Yes. I don't know how much debt my parents, I'm sure they had some good people that would let them have money, but I can remember going to the registrar at North Carolina Central with a letter, and the note said, we'll send the tuition later, and they would let us attend. and they would send payments. There were three of us in college. We stayed at home and we rode the bus. Our father would go to the bus station late Sunday night and buy a book of tickets. And we would travel with these tickets all week to North Carolina Central. I think were fortunate enough to stay on campus, two out of the five.
Can you tell me about your school, what the school was like?
Lincoln High School.
That would be fine.
Okay. Lincoln High School was within walking distance. I started out there 5 years old. At that time, the teacher would say, please send your birth certificate. But after you stayed there so many weeks, you know, you were accepted. And our parents sent us to school because another child was on the way, another child was there, and she needed some care. So they would send several of us to school at 5 years old. We never took the birth certificate to school. And it was great. We had punishment. We had the principal, the teacher would punish us and things like that. But the activities that we had were just outstanding as far as I was concerned.
What kind of activities?
Well, in elementary school, we had May Day. We would raise money for the school through this activity with May Queens. Each class would raise money. So that started in the first grade. We would have plays every week or every assembly activities that you would participate like that. We had basketball games, football games. We could stay at school, after school, you know, for a few minutes, an hour or two, to play on the playground. There were so many activities in our community that were sponsored by the school that we attended from first through 12th grade, that it was great going to school at Lincoln.
Now, what was it? Was it called Lincoln when you started there, or was it Orange County Training?
It was Orange County Training School. At that time, the majority of the black schools in North Carolina were named training schools. And from my memory, my mother was president of the PTA in 48 or 49, before my brother graduated. And she ran for president because she said she did not want her son to graduate from a training school.
What was the connotation of the training school that she didn't like?
That black students were being trained. They were not in high school. There was Roxburgh, Pearson County Training School, Orange County Training School in Hillsborough. I can't remember if that was the correct name for Hillsborough. But all the communities except Durham and Raleigh, the black schools had training schools. That was their name. They would take the county name and make it a training school because at that time they thought that they didn't want to get the schools mixed up because of segregation. They wanted you to know that you attended black schools, so they were named training schools. And so she said she did not want her son to graduate from a training school in the PTA. Had a great big renaming of the school. First, the PTA and the students voted. We had assembly and we voted for a name. And I wish I could remember some of them. I remember one was, they wanted to name it, oh my goodness. They came down to three names. Oh, boy. And we voted for it. At this time, I can't remember the three names, but I know Lincoln won. I don't know if one was for the people that gave the land for the school. I can't remember their last names now, but I think their names was among the selection, but it came down to three schools, and out of that, they voted for Lincoln High School.
So, the Orange County Training School, which is now Northside Center, became Lincoln School?
Lincoln High School.
Lincoln High School.
Yes.
And that was what year, 1949?
49 is when he graduated. I think they had already ordered their diplomas, and I have to go back and look, but I think that the diplomas came out as Orange County Training School, but the school was named Lincoln High. I do have a folder at home that has the school's name on it, the class of 49. And I'd have to go back and look at that photo, but I think the school was officially named Lincoln. But since all the process went through the main offices to ordering diplomas and things of that sort, I'm thinking that the diplomas may have said Orange County Training School.
And then in 51, Lincoln Allen Merritt Mill Road was built.
Right.
And did you attend Lincoln Allen Merritt Mill Road?
Our class was the first senior class to attend Lincoln. We graduated in 1952. We were the first graduating class from Lincoln on Merritt Mill Road.
What influence did you think that the Orange County Training School had on the new Lincoln High School out at Merritt Mill Road?
Well, when Lincoln was built and finished, they renamed our old building Northside Elementary. That was an elementary school. Lincoln was 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, I think. And the other students went to Northside. So we had two schools at that time in Chapel Hill for the black students.
Did the same philosophy of teaching that was at Orange County Training School move on to the new Lincoln High School?
Same kind of philosophy. Same high school principal moved with us to Lincoln High School, Charles A. McDougall. So we had another principal at Northside that was James Peace. So the philosophy was the same. We had the same teachers at Lincoln. We just moved to a new building. The building was new, but the philosophy was the same.
What was the philosophy?
To teach, to learn, to, oh boy, to respect, to honor, to seek higher education.
Now, when you say to respect and to honor, can you explain that a little further? Who were you respecting? Who were you honoring in the eyes of the teachers? What were they trying to get across to you?
First, that you have to decide for yourself your future. You had to study. You had to respect your parents, you had to respect the teachers, respect the building, take care of our school, take care of our books, take care of our anything that was related to the school. Gosh.
So you're not talking about simply educating subject matter here. You're talking about a completely different kind of teaching.
That was always brought in with the subject area. Manners, how to get along with others, to all this was brought in with the teaching. The teachers that were at the school had been here some time. When I say that, I mean that they had taught at this school for more than 2 or 3 years. Some of the teachers, not all of them, but those that were here for a long time, we knew what they expected from us. We knew that that they had certain goals and values, and they put these goals and values in daily lessons.
Was there much turnover in the teaching staff or the principal's office?
No, not much turnover. Mr. McDougall was here for a long time, and before that, Mr. Holmes, he was here for several years. The high school teachers were here for a long time. Ms. Turner, Ms. Pope. At that time, I can remember only one teacher that graduated from Lincoln and went off to college that they hired, and that was Thomasine Kirkland's birthday. She was from our neighborhood. She lived two houses from me. They were the first family to have a telephone because her mother was a nurse in our neighborhood. She's the only one I can remember that they hired from the Cherubia community. The school board had a philosophy that if you finish, I'm just guessing, I don't know, but my feelings were, if you finish from Lincoln, you didn't come back to this community to teach, because I don't know.
So the teachers were usually not teachers who grew up here?
Yes, they were teachers that did not grow up.
Well, why do you think that was so?
Philosophy of the school board and the principals, I guess. But James Peace was a principal, and he grew up just a few houses from me. So those are the only two people I can remember at that time. Since that time, several other people have been hired to finish school from Lincoln High School. And but during my high school days, that's all I can remember. Of course, Mr. Peace was hired after I graduated.
Did the teachers live in the same areas?
All teachers were required to live in the community. They had homes in Winston-Salem or Raleigh, but they roomed here. They bought houses here. They were expected to be, I think they were expected, but the majority of them came, lived here, participated in the community, attended churches here, went home on weekends, participated in community activities. They were among us.
So your parents knew them, and you knew them?
Yes, we knew them.
And they knew you?
Yes, they knew me. Five children. They knew us.
Tell me about Mr. McDougall.
He was a stern disciplinarian. We could hear him, he would walk down the hall with a certain stride. He was aware of all of his surroundings, what was happening with the teachers and the students. He knew them all by name.
All the students?
All the students, from the first to the 12th grade. When I graduated, there were only 26. But he spoke to parents.
Did he go to their homes to speak to them?
Sure he did. The teachers were required at the beginning of the school to visit every home of the students that they had in their classroom. They would do that within the first 2 or 3 weeks of school. I don't know if that was Mr. McDougall's or the principal's requirement, but it soon faded as the school got larger. But when I was small, we would get ready for the teacher's visit. They would introduce themselves. We would have an assembly the first day of school. And they would announce the new teachers. Then they would get up and tell who was in their class, and we'd stand up and follow her to our classroom. So we would have a big assembly to begin in the school. We wouldn't know our teachers' names until we attended the first day.
Was Mr. McDougall's voice a stern voice, a booming voice, or was it just a sort of an average kind of thing if he was talking or on the loudspeaker system?
I wish I could remember all this. He had a stern voice. We always remember him as a stern disciplinarian. But I got to know him very well that last year of high school. He would always have two students to work in his office. And I remember that I was chosen as one of those students, so I got to know him in a different light. He was a warm person. He was a stern person. He was a person that we respected.
What kind of things did he do that made you respect him?
He dished out discipline. He dished it out. I mean, it was something to sweep that auditorium. We had a gymtorium with these poles in the floor. We played basketball there. And you had them take down those seats and sweep it. You burned a lot. Well, you could discipline you.
So that was one of the disciplines, huh?
Yes. Sweep.
Did he show a loving side to him as well, to the broad group of students who were there?
Well, we think of him as a principal. At that time, you respected the principal. You tried to keep out of his way. And if you saw him open the door and look at you, you know, you say, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. But he also came in and said, how you doing? So.
Did he ever inquire as to how you were doing with your grades?
I can't remember.
Did he greet the students every morning at the door?
Well, I wish I could remember. Well, I think of how many years ago. I can't remember. Probably. See, we had entrances to the high school, and we had an elementary entrance. We had so many entrances. Not so many, but we had several. You could go to the classrooms from the outside into elementary school, right into your classroom. You could go in the big door up the steps at the front of the classroom. You could enter the back door. So I think at different times he would be at these different doors. So it wasn't a thing that he would stand in a certain place every day. Sometimes he would just be in the hallway, where you could see down the high school and then see the auditorium from the elementary. It's been such a long time.
How important was the school to the African-American community?
It was the second most important thing, my belief, the church being the first. Well, maybe the home the first, then the church, then the school.
We haven't talked about the church. Can you tell me what the church meant to you and your family when you were growing up?
We attended St. Paul, which has been here over 125 years. At that time, I did not know that one of my grandfathers had started church, so that was not in my attendance or having to attend there. I just remember that it was a small church. We would have Sunday clothes. We didn't wear these clothes during the week. We had Sunday shoes. And the Saturdays that I talked about walking downtown to town some time ago, we would always have to go buy ribbons to match our dresses. We would get a yard each so we could wear it on our hair. Always had shiny new ribbons on Sunday. who had Sunday clothes, and the family would go to church together. Now, after having 5 children, my mother decided that she wanted to start cooking dinner, so she didn't attend church. But my father would take us, and we would attend Sunday school. Then he would come back dressed, and then he would come to church. We were expected to stay from Sunday school and sit at a certain place until he came back. Then we would stay for church. If my mother appeared, we would be so happy. And sometimes she would surprise us. In church today. But it doesn't mean that she was not so-called backside or anything, that she had 5 children. So we would stay to Sunday school and church. Our parents sang in the choir. We served as trustees, missionaries, many, many different offices. So the church was very important to us. They had activities that were related to community things. Like one time we had summer baseball league. And the only way you could play on these leagues was to attend Sunday school. We had a lot of newcomers, a lot of friends who did not attend every Sunday that started attending because they wanted to play ball. They wanted to participate in this activity. Of course, this is still going on today. But at that time, we could point people out, you know, he wants to play ball. That's why he's coming.
You knew the true believers.
Yes, we knew. But it kept us out of trouble, which was the church's activity during the summer to provide recreation.
So they did provide recreation.
They did provide recreation.
Where were the gathering places for you and your friends as you were growing up? I know you had mentioned right out on Church Street. Were there other gathering places for the young people?
My backyard was a gathering place. We call it Atwater Gym. My father had a basketball goal. And to this day, I can hear at night sometimes that basketball, the sound of the bounce, especially when I'm on Church Street, because they were free to come and play anytime they got along. So many children came to Atwater Gym. That's what we come to. But we also had, when I was in high school, we always had the community center. Hogley is his name now. But it was built for the name of Pre-Flight. Standing in, we could go over there and have activities. Had a recreation director, and they were playing things during the summertime for us to participate. So we had the community center, we had the school, we had the church, we had home.
What were the things that you got out of the church? What were the important ideas that the church left you with? What kind of education? What kind of values?
That to be a well-rounded person, needed to participate in your church. This was your church provided services. You should participate in the church, to participate in the church activities. Our churches were family churches. Certain families attended the Baptist, or the Second Baptist, or CME. Knew that even though this family attended, we could come together at least once or twice a year to worship, anytime to worship together. But in the summertime, we would have church picnics. We would get buses and go to Raleigh. This was the time of all the black churches would come together and attend this great big activity in Raleigh because we didn't have a swimming pool in Chapel Hill. We went to Fulham. I hope that's not wrong. We went to
Fulham Park.
I don't know if it was Fulham. I think it's Fulham Park is still there, so it wasn't Fulham. It's another thing. We would just go there and we would. They had picnic tables, they had merry-go-rounds, they had a ball playing field, they had a little activity place, a little place that you could go in and dance and listen to music, but the swimming pool was a major attraction. So it was a part of our life.
You had mentioned before the PTA, the fact that your mother was president of the PTA at Orange County Training School about the time they changed the name of the school. Can you tell me more about the PTA?
When I attended, I was always taking a nap, so I can't remember. But we did, she would take us if my father was working. We had to go sit in the back of the PTA. The PTA was very active. The PTA, of course, was very well organized with presidents, vice presidents, things like that. They raised money for the school to buy curtains, to purchase the bus. I don't know if they had anything to do with the so-called halls of the school or anything like that, but they saw a way to provide uniforms for the basketball team and the football teams, along with the coaches. Teachers could get up and request certain things.
How well attended was the PTA?
Since I only attended when I was very small, I think it was well attended. It was within walking distance. It was always on the night when it was in the church at major activity. Everybody knew when they would meet. Well, some people would come there with their rights and things like that, but I think it was well attended.
Did they have performances at the PTA meetings? Did the children from the school do anything?
Yes, they would have classes to perform at the opening of the PTA. Maybe they would have a certain teacher would be assigned to provide the devotion at the PTA. They could have two students, three students, the entire class to come and open the PTA meeting, and then the students would go. Maybe their parents went home with them, didn't stay for PTA, because at that time we didn't have, they called babysitters in our community. The parents did work. I guess some of these questions are coming back from the other people you interviewed. But due to the fact of my memory is lost.
You're doing great.
Thank
you're
you.
Just doing great. You really are. I couldn't remember half the
remember
things
some of
you
things. There's so many different memories. When we do have our alumni meetings, things come up, you know, and I say, oh, I remember that when they start telling that stuff. Did that really happen? You know. I wasn't in school that day. I don't remember missing many schools, but some people have so many different memories. We get together for the reunion, we divide. We are the first night we meet is what we call class. The class gets together. Then the next time we have activities that include all the class. But that night, when the classmates are talking, I said, boy, I wasn't in school that day because the memories are so different. I can remember people being expelled by Mr. McDougall and not coming back to school. I can
remember families being angry with the teacher or angry with the school system. So everything wasn't lovey-dovey. But they can tell things due to the fact the families, the older people, not older people, but the parents didn't talk that much. This was their business. I've heard things at these class meetings, these class gatherings that I wasn't aware of, or I didn't remember. Having these reunions since 1973, and the first year we had it, one of my classmates from Atlanta married a college professor, and he went back, he attended with his wife, we had a good time, we had a banquet, we had a ranch house, we had a memorial service, the list was short thing. We got a picnic. And of course we always ask them to bring back their children. And this is the first time that we had an opportunity to meet our classmates' children. It was very exciting. The university professor went back to his class and was telling that he had attended this high school reunion that was just outstanding. And it just happened to the person in his class was from Chapel Hill. He couldn't believe that he heard his professor expressing how great a time he had had at a Lincoln High School reunion.
Did most of the graduates leave Chapel Hill?
Most of the graduates left Chapel Hill.
Why was that?
Jobs, education. The parents had going back. Many parents, you know, moved to the north, and the grandparents raised the children. They didn't want them in the city at that time. So when they left, they would either go with their parents, you know, get a job, most of the time for education. We could not attend the university, which was most reasonable, you know. So they would go to predominantly black schools at that time.